Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Mickey Useups, and this is Wayne Pike Now, a weekly public affairs program about the people, places, and issues that shape our community. Today, I have in the studio a wonderful array of people. Joining me today is the Pike County District Attorney, Ray Tonkin. I also have the Pike County Director of Children and Youth Services, Shannon Wisniewski, as well as Safe Haven Executive Director, David Beaver. They're joining me today to talk about the Multidisciplinary Investigative Team. This is actually a group of different individuals who work together to deal with child abuse cases or other crimes that involve children, and to investigate those crimes and to work with the kids, all kind of leading up to what they call a children's advocacy center. And we'll get into more detail on that in a little bit. But Ray Tonkin, Pike County District Attorney, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Mickey. I appreciate it.
Now, I wanted to start with you because I know it was your office that sought a grant for a coordinator to kind of bring all these different people together, law enforcement, children's advocates, the victims advocates, and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that grant?
Certainly, Mickey. It was headed up through efforts of myself, Safe Haven, and Children and Youth Services to bring together a coordinator who would assist the multidisciplinary investigative team with coming together at reviewing cases, and each one of us coming together being all in the investigation of child abuse cases and servicing the child and making sure that a child can get services that they need to heal after they've suffered from abuse.
The child advocacy centers have existed for some time. I know that one in Scranton started in the 1990s. This would bring that kind of thing closer. The multidisciplinary team involves a lot of different elements. Pretty much anybody who might come in contact with a child during this investigation. Can you talk a little bit about the different elements of the team?
Well, the different elements of the team are prosecution, children and youth services, victim services, which is Safe Haven's part in the team, along with law enforcement, medical staff, and various other types of people that may be able to assist with a child and with thoughts about the investigation of a particular case. So what happens is the team comes together to review a particular case to see if all the bases have been covered or if there's possible other directions that the investigation could travel, which is not only to identify and arrest and prosecute the perpetrator, but really to focus in on the child, that the child is really the center of the hub of the wheel, to make sure that things are child-friendly and that the child gets the help that they need.
This really responds to the idea that children who are brought into or get involved with the criminal justice system as victims, they don't come at it as adults do. And they need to be treated differently or to be handled a little more carefully. We're going to go now to Shannon Wisniewski. She's the director of Pike County Children and Youth Services. Shannon, let's talk a little bit about why this interdisciplinary approach is so important when dealing with a child at the center as the victim in a crime.
Multidisciplinary teams are required by law. They're involved in the Child Protective Services law. The state really sets the statutory and regulatory requirements for the MDIT team. It's really to make sure that we're promoting the safety of the child and what's in the child's best interest, minimizing the trauma experienced by the child, making sure that we're condensing interviews down to one if possible, making sure to avoid the duplicate fact-finding efforts of everyone involved, preserving the integrity of evidence and really supporting the justice and healing for that child.
This really goes to the fact that a young child who's been traumatized by child abuse or neglect, every time they have to go over this with an interviewer, whether it's children and youth or a member of law enforcement or a member, you know, someone working on the actual prosecution of the perpetrator, that re-traumatizes the child. So this coordination effort is really, really about minimizing that impact on them and really keeping them, it's kid-centric, keeping it, you know, something that they can grasp onto, because this can all be very, very overwhelming for a child. Not only what they've been through, but then to go through this process becomes really, really difficult. And there are some special things that the team can utilize in order to help these kids deal with it.
Yes, one of the things that we're actually looking at is making sure that we have trained forensic interviewers that are the ones that are conducting the interviews with the children. We've had a couple of our staff go to get the forensic interviewing training. All of our staff are trained in how to interview children, but really making sure that when we're dealing with sexual abuse and severe physical abuse, that we're dealing with interviewers who know how to interview a child without trying to lead them in any way, without trying to re-traumatize them.
Right, absolutely. And that's really the most important thing. I mean, you know, when this is all over, these kids need to heal. So that's an important part of all this. And keeping these re-traumatizations to a minimum really can help in that long-term recovery.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things that we look at right from the start is what services will help this child deal with the trauma. So getting the team together, getting mental health professionals together, getting medical professionals together to really set out a map of what's going to be best for this child long term as far as treatment and healing is concerned.
Excellent. And the grant itself was actually put together in order to fund a coordinator for this team. So now we're going to move to David Beaver, the executive director of Safe Haven. Now, this new coordinator, it's Safe Haven that's going to be hiring this coordinator to work with all these other folks, right?
Yes, the position will be housed at Safe Haven of Pike County, which is Pike's dedicated victim service agency.
Now, Safe Haven of Pike County has long been involved with sexual and domestic violence. Recently, you guys have expanded to deal with all major crimes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
What we thought was important, and again, I thank Ray for asking us to look into that possibility, is because we already had the expertise within the agency to assist folks who were dealing with the traumas, not only of experiencing violent crime, but of being part of the system. And I think it's important what Shannon said about, or I believe you may have said it actually, about the children coming into the system don't necessarily understand what's happening to
sure.
them. Interestingly enough, adults also experience that, but the difference being a child will often ask for help and an adult won't.
Huh.
So one of the major tasks of victim services is just to explain the system to victims so they know what they're getting into
sure.
because it's new to them.
So what exactly are you looking for then in this coordinator that you're expecting to hire right away?
Well, this is a really exciting project for victim services, and I appreciate that Safe Haven was supported by Ray and Shannon in applying for this grant and also local law enforcement. Because I think victim services can bring to this position that victim-centric, absolutely victim-focused position that really doesn't have any other mission beyond that. Safe Haven's mission is entirely victim-focused. And what the coordinator will do here, it's kind of an interesting job because the person will be bringing the team together and helping the team to discuss these cases in a much more coordinated and a much more systematized way than they've done in the past, although those discussions have definitely occurred because we've had successful handling of these cases in the past. But I think having the person who's that voice facilitating coming from a victim services background is going to go that much further toward making this process victim friendly.
Excellent. Talk about what it is Safe Haven is hoping to find in this coordinator.
Well, we're asking for a lot.
I'm sure.
especially since it's a part-time position, but we've been lucky to interview some really dynamic people, and we're excited very shortly to be making an offer. What this position really needs essentially is good facilitation and people skills. One of the most difficult things working on a team like this is knowing that everybody has the same goal, but everybody's coming from a different perspective.
Sure.
So, you know, we all want the child to get their needs met and justice to be served, but each of our roles are very different. This coordinator is going to have to understand that and to be able to really be diplomatic with all the team members about their various roles. And all the team members, I think, are going to have to invite some challenge to the work they're doing because this is really going to formalize our discussions. And as we've prepared to bring this position on board, the team has been meeting and we've started those good discussions. Another role of that person will be to take a look at our countywide protocol, which we have from the district attorney's office, and to discuss with the team how it's working, how it can be improved, what's good about it, what are we doing right.
Now, let's the protocol that you're talking about, that's when authorities are notified of a potential case of child abuse, let's say. This is what happens next. And I guess we're going to go to our district attorney, Ray Tonkin. And maybe you can talk about those protocols since that was prepared for by your office. Kind of what happens now? What's the first step? You know, somebody calls 911 and says, I think my neighbor's beating their kid.
Usually what happens is a report comes in through a referral from Childline that goes into the children and youth system. they will notify our office, and we will notify the appropriate law enforcement agency to begin an investigation. From there, Children and Youth Services and law enforcement work together as part of that investigation, because while they do have the same focus of protecting the child and seeing that justice is done, they do have separate roles also. Children and Youth Services, the main focus is the safety of the child and any other children that may be near a potential perpetrator, while law enforcement is focused on attempting to gather enough evidence so that there could be a criminal case to prove someone guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So the protocol then just kind of identifies how those agencies work together. And one important part of the protocol is what's called forensic interviewing, where people are specially trained to interview children. And as Shannon said before, so they are only interviewed once, not once by law enforcement, once by Children and Youth, and then again and again by different parts of the child abuse investigative team. That person is specially trained to interview children in a non-leading way to make sure that the child is telling an accurate story, that someone hasn't put a story into the child's mind for some reason that they may want a child to allege these things and they've had influence over the child, and to make sure that it's the child's words that are accurately stating what happened.
The fewer times that that whole process has to happen, the more concise of a story the child can present to the investigators. Am I right in that?
You are. And the main focus of the forensic interviewer is to make sure that the child is telling the child's story, not picking up on questions that are asked by individuals that have maybe different goals in mind, and then feeding into those questions and responding in a way the child thinks that they are needed to respond.
Right.
So it is a non-leading, very open communication with the child in a child-friendly environment to see what the child will have to say about the abuse allegations that are usually brought by an adult.
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of, maybe I think we're probably moving on to Shannon Wisniewski at this point. Now, this is done in what adults might think of as somewhat unorthodox, because you might use dolls, you may use toys, you may use drawings in order to help the child express themselves. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And depending on the child's age, one of the things that we look at when we do the forensic interviewing training is making sure that we're using anatomically correct dolls, that they're not using something that wouldn't make sense to them.
Sure.
You know, using the terms that they use. We don't want to use adult terms that maybe that child doesn't use. So really making sure that we understand what their terminology is and how they apply it to their everyday life. You know, the more we can focus on what the child's reality is, the more likely we are to get what the child's thinking and what the child's experience.
And you talked about the training that some of the folks in your agency go through. These interviews are recorded, are they not? So that everybody gets to use them, because when we go through the discovery process, once we get into the criminal case, obviously the defense has a right to deal with this information. Do they do their own interviews, or is this a way of kind of helping to protect the child from that?
The current way that we do things is normally through the Child Advocacy Center in Scranton, is normally where we would take the child to be interviewed. We do a brief interview if it's an immediate concern that we need to ensure that child's safety now.
Sure.
Making sure that when they do go up to the CAC that is recorded, that it's done by a forensic interviewer, that a report is made, so that that child only has to do it once.
Right.
If we can use the DVD to go over with evidence, however Ray needs to use it for criminal prosecution purposes, making sure that we only have to do that one time.
Right. Excellent. Dave Beaver from Safe Haven, let's talk a little bit about what a child advocacy center is and what it can do to help the multidisciplinary team in its work.
The typical child advocacy center would have several components, the first of which would be the capacity to conduct these forensic interviews in a manner that is prescribed by standards that are national for child advocacy centers.
And accepted by the courts.
Right. And really having a facility to do that in addition to the trained person is that part of the piece of the puzzle. The second piece would be able to do a medical examination on an as-needed basis. Some centers have their own medical facilities built in. That's something that this team will have to consider. Is that something we really need on a full-time basis, or could we contract with someone else? And the remaining piece is the victim advocacy piece. That's the piece Safe Haven already has in place. And I see this project as helping us to bring our A game up and to learn more about the child abuse that we aren't currently serving. If we currently focus on child sexual abuse, just as I think the process of bringing this position to a victim service agency was a natural one, I think this thing evolving into a CAC is a very natural process as well.
Let's turn to District Attorney Ray Tonkin. Ray, can you talk about how a Children's Advocacy Center would benefit law enforcement and the work that you do in bringing perpetrators to justice?
Well, it really benefits, the focus is the benefit of the child themselves. While not every case will end up in an arrest and not every case will end up in a prosecution, the important thing is to focus on the child in the array of disciplines that are at the table of the MDIT team. That naturally flourishes into a child advocacy center to make sure that the child's needs are met first. What I noticed, having been appointed to the Victim Services Advisory Committee by then Governor Corbett, was that there was competition for funding. There was competition in two ways, one for grant funding and two for community nonprofit funding. So I reached out to Dave Beaver to see if we could put this together under Safe Haven, under one roof, so there's not competition in the same community for nonprofit funding and for grant funding. And really, when a person is a victim, whether they are a victim of some sort of assault, child abuse, a burglary, or sexual assault, domestic violence, the victim really just needs one place to go to under one roof. And then under that one roof, the specialties can be there to help that type of trauma that victim has suffered.
We're going to finish up with a moment or two with Shannon Wisniewski and the Pike County Children and Youth Services. Can you talk about what the positive things that you think a Children's Advocacy Center will do for what you do in protecting the children?
At this point, we believe that making sure that the interview is done one time, making sure that we really have a concrete interview, however we are proceeding, whether it's through court, whether it's through indicated child abuse cases, whether it's through unfounded cases, making sure that we can ensure that child's safety going forward and their well-being, making sure that they have all of the services that they could possibly need, whether it's follow-up medical services, whether it's follow-up with a mental health professional, whether it's follow-up with therapy that's specifically trained in how to deal with sexual abuse or physical abuse issues, making sure that the family can continue to be whole when possible.
Sounds great. Thank all of you for coming so much. I really appreciate it. This is a major step forward for criminal justice and for victim services in Pike County for sure. And I thank all of you for tuning in. Drop by again next week and we'll talk some more.